It's already Wednesday, and this is Ozarks at Large for September 8th, 2021. I'm Kyle Kellums. This is KUAF, a listener-supported service of the University of Arkansas. In about 4 minutes, Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich will let us sit in on a Cherokee language class at the University of Arkansas, the first ever such class in the U of A's history. 583 new cases of COVID-19 in yesterday's report from the Arkansas Department of Health. That's a report that covers Labor Day. The ADH is reporting 38 new deaths from the virus and an increase of 8 patients in the state's hospitals because of coronavirus. 2,540 doses of vaccines were administered in the past 24 hours. Active cases in the state dropped by nearly 2,000. Governor Asa Hutchinson is scheduled to host a press briefing about the virus this afternoon. We'll include highlights from that session on tonight's 7 o'clock version of Ozarks at Large. As of August 30th, Arkansas has given out just 4% of the $173 million it received from the federal government to provide rent relief and assistance to Arkansans. That's according to the Arkansas Department of Human Services. Governor Asa Hutchinson says the state plans to make the process easier for tenants to get access to the funding.
Right now, it's a requirement that both the landlord and the tenant have to provide specific information and sign off on it. And we looked at what some of the other states and what some of the reasons for delay is. And it is important to verify the existence of a landlord. Sure. But once you verify that existence and that there really is the rent that is due, then at that point, we're going to be able to simplify it and not require the sign-off by the landlord. We can get that money directly to the tenant once we have that verification in process.
The governor says this will get money in the hands of renters much faster, but he also says Arkansas was allocated too much money, and even after all of the people who need rental assistance receive aid, there will still be money sent back to the federal government. A crowded race for the Republican nomination for Lieutenant Governor of Arkansas is a bit more crowded. Chris Bequette, an attorney and business owner in Little Rock, is the fifth to announce an intention to run for the GOP nomination. Already indicating a run are State Senator Jason Rapert, Arkansas's Surgeon General Greg Bledsoe, Doyle Webb, the former chair of the state Republican Party, and Washington County Judge Joseph Wood. The president of the University of Arkansas system is making a recommendation for the next head of the Clinton School of Public Service. President Dean Bobbitt says he's recommending Dr. Victoria M.D. Francesco Soto to replace retired Skip Rutherford as the next dean of the Clinton School. Currently, D. Francesco Soto is assistant dean for civic engagement at the LBJ School of Public Affairs at the University of Texas in Austin. Bentonville's police chief will retire after 27 years with the city police department. John Simpson says his final day will be September 30th. A native of the city, Simpson first joined Bentonville's police department in 1994. A statement from the city indicates a search is underway for his replacement. And Northwest Arkansas Community College is counting fewer students enrolled this fall compared to fall 2020. Yesterday, the 11th day of classes, the school reported just more than 7,000 students taking classes. That's a 7% decrease to the 11th day count of nearly 7,600 students taken last fall semester. The 11th day count includes only students taking classes for college credit. This is Ozarks at Large. The University of Arkansas is offering, for the first time, a course in Cherokee language. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich takes us to meet Cherokee instructor Lawrence Panther.
When Cherokee language instructor Lawrence Panther arrived last Wednesday evening to teach his beginner Cherokee language class, he discovered that his students had written a message to him on the whiteboard.
And they're written good enough where I don't have to wear my glasses to see it.
We did write them rather large.
Panther's students had written Gula Helega, which means grateful.
It could be like a favor. Like somebody told you, asked about, hey, can you go to the store for me? Go give me some bread or grocery. And they say, yeah, sure. You know, they go get it for you. Then you don't necessarily say, yeah, well, don't. You can say, hey, Gula Helega, you know, I'm real happy. I'm happy you did that for me. Okay, that's what that Gula Helega means.
This language class is packed with students from across disciplines, everyone carefully taking notes and copying Cherokee alphabet letters drawn by Panther on the board.
This is a U-li-he-li-s-ta. U-li-he-li-s-ta, okay? Later on, we'll learn that "oo" is a third person, like somebody, you know, "uduli," they want.
The twice weekly class is an hour and a half long. Before class, Panther told us he only spoke Cherokee until age 6, then attended public school in the early 1960s where he only spoke English.
And I picked it up all right when I went to the Indian school because all the other students were already speaking English. And I thought they spoke pretty good, whether I don't know if they did or not, because, you know, I didn't know how to speak. But it sounded good. And a lot of words I didn't understand. For instance, one time this boy made me cry. And one of my friends came over and said, "Did he hurt your feelings?" I didn't know what that meant. I just said, "Yeah." You know, and then later on I found out, you know, what that meant. You know, it was, you know, something, you know, somebody kind of make you sad, you know. So, you know, things like that, you know, I started learning the English.
He later obtained a Cherokee Cultural Studies degree from Northeastern State University in Tahlequah, Oklahoma, home of the Cherokee Nation. He lives in Jay, Oklahoma, with his spouse, Pam Panther. He says he always begins his language courses with phonics, working from the Cherokee syllabary or alphabet.
Because it's kind of written out in alphabetical order, and that's what I try to tell them, that, you know, it's the vowels, you know, from A to B, then from the consonants, it's from G to Y. Because you can learn that phonetic chart in 30 minutes.
Panther also teaches Cherokee language skills to high school students in Stillwell, Oklahoma, and offers courses to church and community groups, as well as programs at museums. But teaching at the University of Arkansas is an entirely new experience, he says.
Yeah, I'm pretty comfortable, and I'm comfortable because I'm very happy to be here. I'm glad they made it possible. And one other thing we talked about was that this is the 200th year Sequoia invented the syllabary. See, and this is the very first time the university has, you know, gotten Cherokee language. You know, it's a coincidence, like, you know. And it's very, very ulahilista, you know, it's good.
Panther is referring to noted Cherokee scholar Sequoia, who in 1821 authored a Cherokee syllabary, a written alphabet, the first of its kind. The U of A Cherokee One language course, the first of its kind on campus, is offered through the Department of World Languages, Literatures, and Cultures.
There are so many people who want to take this course.
Sean Tutan is an associate professor of English at the University of Arkansas who directs the Indigenous Studies program.
And they represent a spectrum of interest. Some are Cherokee Nation citizens, students, a lot of Native students who aren't Cherokee, but they're Native American, and they want to learn an Indigenous language, so they're in the class. It's returning students. So we have just a range. And what's exciting about the course, on the very first day when Lawrence walked in, he began to talk in the language and tell stories about who he is and where he's from. And the students were just entranced with his speech. And when they were invited to share who they were and their interests, I have to say it's one of the most single-minded, intensely interested, curious group of students that I've seen. And I've been teaching for many years.
Tutan is an enrolled member of the Cherokee Nation, but is not a fluent speaker, so he's enrolled in Panther's class. He also facilitated Panther's hire as the first Cherokee language teacher at the U of A. We reported back in 2002 after Cherokee Nation Principal Chief Chad Corntassel Smith discovered a dearth of fluent speakers among tribal members below age of 40. He declared a state of emergency. His administration set about revitalizing the Cherokee language, including developing a language immersion program for preschool children, a university partnership degree program in Oklahoma for certifying Cherokee language teachers, and an array of community language activities. Today, the Cherokee Nation operates community and online language classes, the Cherokee Language Master Apprentice Program, and provides language instruction shorts via YouTube, like this one.
CO, I'm Donetta, and welcome to Cherokee Word of the Week. This week's phrase is Osta Iga Heda. Osta Iga He da, osta iga he da, which means have a great day.
Again, Sean Tutan.
Cherokee language was finally written down and became a written language as early as 1809, when a man named Sequoia single-handedly was able to develop 85 characters to represent every syllable in the Cherokee language.
Sequoia's written Cherokee syllabary has been sourced and studied for generations. Tutan established the Indigenous Studies Program 7 years ago at the U of A, which continues to expand.
Arkansas is very much an Indigenous place where scholars can produce scholarship and study and share all the great contributions Native Americans have made to the United States and the world. And also certainly a place for students to come and learn about Native people and their contributions. And ideally, ultimately, really what I wanted to do was have a program that drew careful connections and built relationships with the neighboring Indigenous nations, certainly over in Oklahoma.
Before it was a state, Oklahoma Territory in 1834 is where 60 tribal nations were forcibly relocated or coerced under the Federal Indian Removal Act. The purpose was to clear historic tribal lands in the northern and eastern U.S. to make way for European settlement. The Cherokee people endured the most deadly forced migration. As many as 4,000 died during the 1,200-mile journey from Georgia along what today is marked as the Trail of Tears. After resettling in Oklahoma Territory, many communal tribal boundaries were later dissolved into small-acre allotments. Parcels, many ended up sold to white settlers. Today, the Cherokee Nation is the largest tribe in the U.S., headquartered in Tahlequah, with more than 390,000 tribal citizens worldwide. More than 141,000 Cherokee Nation citizens reside in northeastern Oklahoma, but Sean Tutan says few Arkansans are aware of the tribe's presence and rich history.
Can you imagine that the Cherokee Nation is about an hour west of here, and so many of us don't really know much about Cherokee people? And it's really quite startling, in fact. So, and Cherokee Nation themselves often don't really know much about Arkansas. In fact, one of the names for Arkansas in the Cherokee language is Yo-Ne-Ga. And Yo-Ne-Ga actually means the white place.
A divide which Tutan says he's working to transcend, starting with this new Cherokee language course, which also provides an indigenous worldview with every alphabet letter.
Lawrence will stand there at the board sometimes and just write the word out in Cherokee language. Sometimes he'll write it in phonetics and both in our syllabary. And he'll begin to tell a story of how that word comes together, how it's related to other words. And you find out the same word for turtle is the same word for lock, because a turtle will draw his feet inside his shell to hide himself like a lock. So, I mean, these words are fascinating. So the etymology alone is just wondrous. So there's that, the worldview, certainly. And then, of course, if you want to do any work in Cherokee Nation, more and more people are insisting upon Cherokee, speaking Cherokee as a source of pride and national identity.
Cherokee 2 will be offered in the spring semester, focused on reading fluency. A third-level course in speaking Cherokee is under development. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
We're going to go back in time with the University of Arkansas a bit later on the show, or at least with Charlie Allison, as he continues examining the first 150 years of the U of A. This week, the creation of the university's fight song. That's in today's second half hour of Ozarks at Large.
I'm Tanya Mosley. California Governor Gavin Newsom is in for a fight.
Larry Elder said food stamps, that's just a giveaway, but apparently cutting the corporate tax to zero, which he promotes, is not.
And his opponent is taking a page from the Trump playbook.
I'm also concerned about the way the left-wing media have characterized this. They call me the black face of white supremacy.
Next time on Here and Now.
Here and Now, today at 1 on KUAF and through the KUAF stream, available on the KUAF app for iPhone. And this is a Wednesday edition of Ozarks at Large. Governor Asa Hutchinson yesterday joined the Fayetteville Chamber of Commerce and the Tahlequah, Oklahoma Regional Development Authority to announce a new two-state partnership. Towns across Arkansas and Oklahoma are looking to be the new space for medical equipment manufacturing in towns all along the Highway 62 corridor. Ozarks at Large's Matthew Moore was at the press conference. He is here now. We are more than 6 feet apart at the Carver Center for Public Radio. Hello, Matthew.
Hello, Kyle.
All right, so what is this new initiative?
The program is being called the Heartland Advanced Medical Manufacturing Regional Cluster, which is a mouthful, so we're calling it HAMRC for short. The cluster plans to work with major medical equipment companies to bring them to this area, which will then provide high-quality and high-paying jobs for local citizens that wouldn't necessarily require a higher education degree. Governor Hutchison talked about how vital the need is for American-made medical equipment, and then it became very clear to him early in the pandemic.
We had ordered, and we had devoted $70 million to this, to buy PPE for our state and for our region to make sure we had it. But we're competing with everybody. We finally found some that was manufactured in Europe, and it was headed toward Arkansas through Spain. And all of a sudden in Spain, they said, well, we need it too, and they seized it. And so it never got here. Now, we got some money back on that transaction, but it illustrates the fact that when you are in an emergency and in a pandemic, you don't want to have to be dependent upon other nations, overseas markets for the supply.
And I think, you know, the question here always is, where is the money for this initiative coming from?
Well, that's a good question. Steve Clark, who is the president of the Fayetteville Chamber of Commerce, says most of the money is coming from the Build Back Better program. Now, this is the infrastructure plan currently sitting in Congress, but it does have bipartisan support and is very likely to pass.
We're going to ask for $75 million, of which $20 million will go in partnership with the Research Technology Park to build a data center.
All right. Do we know what towns are going to be part of this cluster?
According to Nathan Reed, who is the president of the Tahlequah Regional Development Authority, 11 to 13 communities are being invited to be a part of this program, with cities as large as Fayetteville to as small as Lincoln. Of course, Farmington is one of those towns that has already agreed to be a part of it, and Reed says towns east of Fayetteville, like Elkins and Goshens, will be invited to join HAMRC as well.
Why is this focused on medical manufacturing?
Well, as the governor said earlier, they see a great need for medical equipment to be manufactured in America, not just in pandemic times. And the region has excellent health care and education services, which plays a role in attracting companies to put their plants in this region. Access to excellent health care and good schools makes it easier for these companies to say yes, according to the governor.
You want to have the access to top quality health care to attract that talent to our state. But then COVID emphasized it even to a greater extent that you have to have adequate ICU space, you have to have adequate hospital space, but also all of the research and academic parts of healthcare. And of course, we learned that medical technology and manufacturing is a key part of it. We had a gap because of COVID, and that's what we learned very specifically. And that's going to be a long-term lesson, that we have to return more of that manufacturing from overseas back to the United States, and this region needs to take advantage of that.
All right, Matthew Moore is a reporter and producer for us at Ozarks at Large. He was at this press conference yesterday in Farmington. Thank you, Matthew.
Thank you, Kyle.
KUAF is supported by Butterfield Trail Village, Northwest Arkansas retirement community catering to active lifestyles and resident well-being. Amenities and living options from apartments to village homes, plus on-site fitness facilities are available. ButterfieldTrailVillage.org for information. Museum of Native American History presents Knowledge is Out There. The Solution is in You, a contest seeking sustainable solutions for our planet. September 15th is the submission deadline for proposals, essays, comic, video, or radio plays. Categories include kids under 15 and those over 15. Winners will be announced during the 5th annual cultural celebration. MONAH.US for details.
This is Ozarks at Large. The second episode of Undisciplined comes out today. That's our new podcast that we create in collaboration with the University of Arkansas's Department of African and African American Studies. Today, we'll hear an excerpt of a conversation with host Dr. Karee Banton and a Haitian journalist, Obed Lamy. Lamy talks about being proud of his home country and what brought him to Arkansas.
This is Undisciplined. Academic by nature, undisciplined in practice. I am Dr. Karee Banton, Director of African and African American Studies and Professor of History at the University of Arkansas. The podcast here, we will push the confines of your traditional academic disciplines and, like the subjects of its concerns, African and African-American studies, you know, survive under the most terrible of circumstances, but achieve rigor and become even more robust because of it. And so in this podcast, we will unveil how the objectives of African and African-American studies can be found in the everyday, if you'll just look. Now let's get into it. Today, we are joined by Obed Lamy. Obed Lamy is a Fulbright Scholar and graduate journalism student at the University of Arkansas. He just received his master's degree in journalism with a number of years of experience in journalism under his belt. He has published in different news outlets in his home country in Haiti, as well in the international media in Canada and the United States. And he co-founded a multimedia platform dedicated to civic education and practical information on the public process. He's a first-time filmmaker. Obed has made a short documentary called A Promising Voice that was selected into three film festivals and was a winner of the Audience Award for Student Film at Filmland in 2020. And I had the pleasure of recently working on a documentary with Obed that commemorated the lynching of three African-Americans here in Washington County. Obed, thank you for pulling up. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Dr. Benton, for the invitation, and thank you to my friend Warrington, and it's a pleasure to be with you today.
Tell us about growing up in Haiti. How was that like? Do you like mangoes?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's been 29 years. I'm 29, so my whole life is Haiti. So I grew up in a small town called Petit Goave. Whenever I'm introducing myself, I always say where I am from in Haiti because I have so much of this hometown in me, and so much of me also is in this hometown. My dad has been working as a public school teacher for more than 30 years now. My mom has been a stay-at-home mom. So growing up with my dad being a teacher and my mom taking care of us really taught me a sense of community. For example, my dad, every summer, he would do after-class program or summer camp for all the kids in my neighborhood. He would feed them. So that's something that always stay with me. And that's why also I like to be with people. We didn't talk too much about politics, but I can say the best history lessons I've learned about Haiti was from my mom. So because my dad was a teacher, he was working in another town. So he spent the whole week outside. And every night, my mom would tell us the story of her childhood, where she grew up. And also, she was sharing with us the moments she lived when the country was under dictatorship with the Duvalier. So we don't necessarily see or read those stories in book. They don't teach them right now in the country. Maybe, I don't
really
know why. But my mom would always explain us what it was like, what it looked like to be in Haiti during that time.
Describe for us your journey to Arkansas. What brought you here?
Journalism. So yes, the story of me being in Arkansas is also the story of me becoming a journalist. Journalism was not in my mind growing up. And actually, when I was maybe 12, one of the most prominent journalists in the country was also in my hometown. He was killed. Because being a journalist in my country has always been risky.
Dangerous.
So I was young, but I still have in mind the atmosphere, the climate in that hometown, because that was a time when there were a lot of political crises. So you couldn't go to school. You have to hide yourself. You couldn't wear a uniform. So
why couldn't you go to school? Why did you have to hide?
Because there was a lot of violence, gang. Usually, politician leaders in my country, they are always associated with gangs to maintain their power and also fear. I mean, fear is the strategy that most of the politicians in my country use to not lead, maybe to run the country, because there is a lot of conflicts. And it seems like in their mind, having all the power and exposing the population into this scary situation helped them maintain their power. So I've experienced that being a young boy in my hometown. So yes, at that time, that young boy I was had no clue he would become a journalist. But I guess I decided to be a journalist when I went to college, not to study journalism, social communication, and business management. But I don't like business. I don't like to be in a corporate world. I like to meet people. So I started to write for my blog, and then I was received a call from a news outlet, and I started to write news stories every day, and I became a journalist. So I came to Arkansas in 2019 because I have this scholarship from the U.S. government. So shout out to all my American friends because they pay for me. I got that scholarship, the Fulbright scholarship, but the plan was not to come to Arkansas, not at all. I was supposed to go to, at first, study English in Missouri. Again, at that time, there was big protests in my country. Everything shut down. The U.S. embassy could not open to proceed with the visa, and they had to postpone. They found this English program associated with the University of Arkansas. I spent a couple months and realized people are nice. They talk to you on the street, and it's a nice place to stay, and I decided to stay here. But actually, even right now, when I talk to my friends in the United States and back home, I say, I'm in Arkansas. Where is that? They don't know Arkansas too much.
Oh, yeah. Arkansas?
Yeah, they don't know. So I have to explain. This is a state close to Texas, Missouri.
I have to explain to my Caribbean friends, too, that there's Kansas and then there is Arkansas.
Arkansas, exactly. So.
Yeah. You know, one of the thing about America is that they usually think about Haiti through its traumas. So whether it's through the Papa Doc and Baby Doc, or through the earthquake or through the current crisis. How do you all think about those experiences, those traumatic experiences? How did you live through those experiences?
It seems like they have, for us as Haitian people, they have become part of life, but we don't necessarily talk about them or meditate about them. You would see they always call Haitian people resilient. Even that can be negative, but it seems like we have built our own way of survival against those natural forces and also against this political crisis. It's true that you see each time other people and many people in America have to talk about Haiti, it all starts with
Some disaster.
And it's not just in the media. It's everywhere. Last year during COVID in the summer, I was on Dixon Street filming something, and there is this group of homeless people, and I started to talk to them. They asked me where I'm from. I said, I'm from Haiti. Oh, yeah, Haiti, I know that. Violence and blah, blah, blah. And I listened to them, and after I was like, yeah, that is true, but do you know number of people are killed every day in Chicago? And he was like, oh, yeah, that is true. So violence is not made in Haiti. Violence is everywhere. If you want to see Haiti to those situations, you might be right, but it's not just in Haiti, it's everywhere.
And it's quite interesting that it's, you know, in the same way that they tend to demonize Haiti or look at it through this some kind of a pathological violence, the same way people tend to look at Chicago, right, as this kind of black place that is dominated by violence.
Yes.
You know, so I think for people, Haiti represents blackness or the blackest blackness in the Western Hemisphere.
Yes.
And for them, blackness equals violence. You know,
exactly.
And Chicago, in the American imagination, is that black space as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And therefore, that equals violence. Yeah. Nobody tend to think about the context.
Exactly. And I think maybe as a journalist, I think the media has played a big
role
in terms of framing Haiti or framing some places in America this way, showing just violence. Actually, there is in Haiti one of the best jazz festivals around the world. Every year in January, they would bring the best jazz musician from Germany, from the United States, from everywhere. You don't see international media talk about those things. I'm not obsessed about sharing, you know, positive image about Haiti because I'm a journalist. I live there. I want to share the experience of the people dealing with problems so maybe the government or other leader can solve those problems. But I don't think, as you were talking with Rorinton before, I don't think each time you have to write a story about Haiti, it adds nothing to your story because, yes, we know that. And if you want to talk about the assassination of the president, that has nothing to do being the poorest country.
Exactly.
Because actually, a U.S. president has been assassinated too. So you can talk about the facts and not necessarily using this stereotypical language to talk about hate.
I totally agree with you.
Brian Stevens will say, we are all more than the worst thing that we've ever done or the worst thing that's ever happened to us.
Yeah, but it's indicting the humanity of Haitians, right? By flattening their story to this one thing when, as we discussed earlier, there are many different stories. I remember, I can't wait to go to Haiti because I saw this picture of this beach and all these people were having like breakfast in the water and it was like the most beautiful. But Americans don't get to see those kinds of images in the same way, you know, they have these stereotypical images of Africa as well, where it's animals and sports starving children and disasters. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I think Africa, Haiti represents Africa in the West.
And I do feel like there is, just to add something, there is also, although I mentioned that media has played a big role in terms of framing Haiti that way, but also that I also think there is a personal responsibility, not for every single person, but I was curious and surprised when I was working on my master's thesis, somebody had to review the paper for me, and I talk about the Haitian Revolution, the first black nation to be free, and that person is also a grad student saying, oh, I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. Yes, I get that. But we in Haiti, we study so much about the U.S. history.
Exactly.
We memorize the first man to go to the moon. The first black nation to be free is something that you can't miss. I get that you can be a high schooler, you don't know that. But if you are a grad student, I don't expect you to know everything about Haiti. But, I mean, the first black, I don't know how you can miss that.
As Warrington said, I mean, if the American system loved to hold itself up as this driver of liberty and democracy, how can you not celebrate the first country to
create democracy, not only freedom? And actually, I know you know that very, very well. We had a conversation about that. Haitian Revolution was not just about Haitian people or black people. The leaders said that any person who believes in freedom, you have a place in Haiti, no matter your color. And Haitian soldiers or leaders also helped different country in Latin America.
Yeah, Colombia,
Venezuela,
yes,
for
Simon
example.
Bolivar came
Haitian
to Haiti.
Soldiers also fought during the Revolution War in America, in Savannah. We are the most selfishless.
Selfless.
Yeah, selfless nation in the world, so.
Bree Banton and her guest Obed Lammy from the second episode of the podcast Undisciplined. You can subscribe for free so you never miss a new episode. There is a new one every other Wednesday. And you can check out the rest of that conversation following today's Ozarks at Large. Undisciplined is available wherever you get podcasts, and it's produced by Ozarks at Large's Matthew Moore.
Hi, this is Jennifer from Roland, Oklahoma. I started listening to the KUAF because my dad insisted that it was good public broadcasting. I always made fun of him because I thought public radio was boring, but I sure was wrong. I enjoy it, listen to it on a daily basis, and we're lucky to have it. Thank you.
Drivers around the interchange of Interstate 49 and U.S. Highway 71 near the Bella Vista bypass could experience some delays because of periodic blasting today through September 24th. Traffic could be halted for up to 15 minutes as a precaution. Blasting is part of the work needed to create a new interchange with the bypass. Astronomy nights are returning to Hobbs State Park in Benton County with some pandemic-related changes. Opportunities to look at the night sky with astronomers return Saturday night at Hobbs State Park Outdoor Pavilion. Should be noted that as a nod to the Delta variant spread, the park's visitor center will not be open during the astronomy programs. This Saturday, by the way, Jupiter and Saturn will be rising in the east as the first quarter moon drops in the west. A lecture is Saturday night at 7. Sky viewing begins at 8. Bring a flashlight covered with a red cloth, telescope if you have one, a folding chair, and your trusty star chart.
The Eureka Springs CAPC presents Jazz Eureka at the Basin Spring Park at 5 p.m. this Friday and at 2 p.m. on Saturday. Jazz Eureka features Crescent City Combo, Matt and Gus Smith, the Brandt Jester Trio, and more. All performances are free to the public. KUAF is supported by Hendrix College, offering engaged learning by linking classrooms to the world and developing career skills throughout its curriculum. Hendrix graduates pursue medical, law, and other advanced degrees, preparing students to lead lives of accomplishment. Hendrix.edu/connect for more information.
This is Ozarks at Large. Saturday's football game between the Arkansas Razorbacks and Texas Longhorns in Fayetteville will be well attended. As of this past weekend, just standing room only tickets left. And you can bet all those fans in Reynolds Razorback Stadium will hear the Arkansas fight song. For our latest travel through U of A history, Charlie Allison, executive editor for University Relations at the U of A, considers that tune.
Before there could be a fight song at the university, there had to be a fighting team worth the singing. In the mid-1880s, students at the university petitioned the Board of Trustees to set aside 2.5 acres of grounds in front of Old Main for baseball and football, and they asked for funding to improve the grounds. Well, the board agreed to set aside the land, but they wouldn't approve any funding, so whatever improvements occurred came at the industry of the students. During Thanksgiving of 1886, companies of cadets competed against each other in a football match, spelled with foot and ball as two separate words, and a variety of competitions such as tug-of-war, foot races, and a greased pig chase. After another 8 years, students organized an athletic association on campus with the intention of building teams that could compete against other colleges and universities. The first intercollegiate games appear to have been organized in 1894 in the sports of football, tennis, baseball, and track and field. The university at that time, still known as Arkansas Industrial University, or AIU, hosted teachers from across the state for a summer refresher that same year. A program printed for the event included a new university cheer. It went, AIU, rah, 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 Arkansas. I shudder to think what the old ones were like. If that early cheer lacks some, how shall we put it, creativity? Within a couple of years, a student named William A. Ross said that he and his colleagues had evolved some remarkable new college cheers. His favorite being, boomalaka, boomalaka, zip, bam, boom, razzle, dazzle, hoggle, goggle, A-I-U. I would call that a significant improvement. Another decade later, Coach Hugo Bezdek led the Arkansas football team to its first undefeated season. And as almost everyone knows, the Razorback became the adopted mascot. And as a result, a lot of new cheers began to be developed. In 1913, William Edwin Douglas, an electrical engineering major who played clarinet in the U of A orchestra, wrote down lyrics and a melody for what he titled a, quote, field song. And he added the Razorback mascot into the rousing cheer. This was one of the earliest mentions in campus literature of the Razorback, and it reflected the student body's quick embrace of the Razorback as a symbol of might and fortitude. The baseball team had begun adding a silhouette of a Razorback pig to their shirts, but otherwise there weren't very many visible reminders of the mascot yet. Douglas's intention in writing the field song was to create a lyric for the crowd to sing and a tune for the cadet band to play at athletic competitions. His goal was to shake the fans wide awake, get them out of their seats, and turn up the enthusiasm for a Razorback win. He took his brief composition to music professor Henry Tovey, the director of the orchestra. Tovey and Douglas had known each other back in Douglas's hometown of Galesburg, Illinois. Tovey earned his music degree in 1904 at the Knox College Conservatory of Music in Galesburg. He then taught briefly at Wachita Baptist College in Arkadelphia before starting work at the University of Arkansas in 1908. He was head of the Department of Fine Arts and founded anew the Department of Music. Douglas earned a Bachelor of Science degree at Knox College and then came to the University of Arkansas for an electrical engineering degree. After college, he worked for a succession of electric companies, moving to Pennsylvania to design transformers for Westinghouse Electric, then overseeing electrical generation and distribution for the Wisconsin Valley Electric Company, and finally as a division manager for the Monongahela West Penn Company, back in Pennsylvania again. But back to the song. Tovey had previously composed the music for the university's alma mater, written just a few years earlier by Brody Payne. The music for the alma mater is stately, dignified, just a half beat above being asleep. But for the fight song, Tovey added a depth of chords and transitions beyond Douglas's original melody line. Tovey's charging tempo for the tune, a pace that feels like prestissimo when the band's brass section begins firing on all cylinders, pulls fans out of their seats and onto their feet whenever it's played. By the mid-20th century, it became better known as the Arkansas fight song. And the lyrics are, hit that line, keep on going, drive that ball right down the field.
Charlie Allison is the executive editor for University Relations at the University of Arkansas. Each Wednesday, he helps us observe the school's sesquicentennial with discussions about people, places, and events from the first 150 years. You can go to 150.uark.edu to find out about other observations in connection with the sesquicentennial.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. NWA Equality helps Theater Squared kick off their new production of Designing Women with the Designing Women Drag Dinner at the Fayetteville Public Library, Sunday, September 12th, beginning at 4 p.m. A ticket link and details available at nwaequality.org.
Friday, there is a come-as-you-are progressive-style academic party to help kick off the University of Arkansas's sesquicentennial celebration. One of the activities, a math circus from 9 to 4 in Gearhart Hall Courtyard. We recently reached out to Chaim Goodman Strauss, a math professor and artist at the University of Arkansas, who will also be the ringmaster for the math circus.
A genuine math circus, but nobody knows what that is. So what it is it's a public participatory math sculpture building party, basically. So we'll be making some really cool foam lettuce-y things that exhibit a certain kind of mathematical notion of curvature. And we'll be making woven geometric stars, and there'll be cool sidewalk chalking, and there'll be some other surprises too.
Do you have to be deep into mathematics to participate?
Oh, no. This is for general enjoyment for, you know, anybody that just likes something interesting and neat will probably enjoy it.
All right. So let's talk about some of these creations that you've talked about. The stars, I think some people might be familiar with, even if they don't know it, because these have been created in some fashion before, right?
Yeah. So and it's been quite a while, though. So back maybe 15 years ago, there were, you know, a few dozen of these around town, it seemed. But they haven't really made an appearance in Fayetteville for some time. But you'll see a lot of them soon.
Well, let's talk about how are these made? I mean, and what sort of mathematical properties are involved?
Well, so the bamboo stars, they are actually woven through these special jigs that I've made. So in the form of a dodecahedron. So if anyone out there knows what that is, it's, of course, a marvelous shape. And that's more or less the form that the stars take. So you just push the bamboo through the jig, you make the form, remove the jig, and then you've got something pretty cool. The foam thing, it's really a very special technique, which is kind of a little hard to even imagine, but basically it's straight strips of foam that have sort of mismatched numbers of teeth. So when they're fitted together, they have to begin to curve and bend. And then ultimately they're forced mathematically into these very frilly, lettucey, kale-y, corally kinds of shapes that they're very familiar to us somehow. So they're very pleasing.
Yes. I like that you said coral, because images that I've seen, examples of what will be created, they do look like what I would imagine a coral reef off the coast of Australia might look like.
Yeah, I hope so. Very colorful and, dynamic, certainly. Engaging.
How big will this foam creation be?
Well, it's going to be quite large. We can't quite say how big, because these things tend to kind of take on a form of their own, really, a life of their own. But it's going to, the intention is it's going to fill up a pretty substantial part of an atrium in Gearhart Hall. So maybe 20 feet by 5 feet by 4 feet, something like that. Be a fair, so quite large, really.
And you say they take on a life of their own, so you're not exactly sure how it will end up.
So mathematical principles govern some of the intrinsic properties of these surfaces, in particular something called Gaussian curvature, which just is a measure in this sense of the frilliness. The exact amount of frilliness I can control, it's just simply where the frills end up will sort of be determined by the people, that just simply what the foam tells us at the moment, pretty much.
So how does it start? You have people that show up and say, yes, I want to help build this or help create this. Do you receive instruction from you, the ringmaster? I mean...
Oh, yeah. So that's a good thing. So really, the whole idea of these kinds of math circus type events is just to sort of lure passersby, you know, innocently walking down the sidewalk. And then suddenly they find themselves building something pretty fantastic with absolutely minimal instruction, in the sense that these projects are designed to so that people can catch on very quickly, really, and that they're to some extent almost self-working. That's the idea. And that's a real challenge, to design something, you know, that basically is a passerby can pick up and start working on and then make something really pretty amazing at the end.
Well, I can't wait to see it all come together. And hopefully we're able to get enough people there together and we'll stop by the circus and get some comments. How's that?
You know, I was just remembering something, Kyle, that at the so back in the 1980s, in the 2000s, back in the 2000s, we were doing these things and calling them bamboo paloozas.
Oh, that's
and
right.
I was just remembering that at the very first bamboo palooza, you were there, that we did a piece for Ozarks at Large on that. So,
in fact, Haim,
we are all these years ago.
I believe you harvested some of the bamboo for that from my then backyard.
I did, in fact. That's right. That is correct. So there's a long history of Fayetteville, KUAF, Bamboo Palooza connections here.
Well, if you can find a use for honeysuckle, that's in my now backyard, so you can come and get all of that you want.
There's a lot of that around.
Yes. Haim, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much, Kyle.
Haim Goodman-Strauss is a math professor at the University of Arkansas. He'll be the ringmaster for the Math Circus from 9 to 4 in Gearhart Hall Courtyard on the U of A campus Friday. It's part of the Come As You Are kickoff to the U of A sesquicentennial.
From a reckless rover to disco godfather, a new archive of 20th century cinema celebrates the work of Black filmmakers.
There are just so many radical ideas and expression of Blackness in Black cinema's past that can really help shape Black cinema's future.
I'm Elsa Chang, the Black Film Archive, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered, today from 3 to 6 on KUAF and KUAF.com. This weekend, a number of local bands will host an event to help out someone who is close to one of their own who's battling cancer. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis explains.
The local band Ley Lines hasn't been around long. In fact, they recently began playing live shows in front of people about 3 months after first coming together as a band. Joel Robertson, one of the band's members, explains their sound.
The way I think about it is like Southern alternative rock, and mostly just because of the country and blues influence, and like my voice kind of has an accent a little bit. It's really bluesy. It's really groovy. I like Brighton music that has catchy lyrics and it's good to dance to, but it's not unauthentic. It's still, you know, the words that I write are really meaningful to me. Like I might write like a metal song at some point if I feel like it, but it's mostly just like what I like and what I'm feeling at the time. So I would say like alternative rock is the best like umbrella genre to put it under. Well, the world weighs so heavy, love is breaking in me. Such a burden makes introversion my philosophy. When I dream, my stream visits faded from the divine. Gotta feed my ego cheetos just to keep them in line. I feel so lazy, they don't pay me. You're at the same lines, but it's the same conclusions that I reach in my mind. Ever changed, I'm still insane, broken, dirty, and poor. Don't want to die a hungry peasant in a holy war. Woo!
This Saturday, Ley Lines is one of several bands that will perform as part of A Concert Against Cancer, a benefit for Andrea Pendergraft. Robertson says he first met Andrea soon after his family moved to a different house in Siloam Springs, shortly after his father died of lung cancer.
The street that we moved on, one of my mom's old coworker friends, Andrea, moved in a couple doors down. She had a daughter that's 5 years older than me, Danica. And we just went over there. Me and my brother, Richard, went over there one day because we were bored and it was summer break and we didn't know what to do. And my mom was like, just go hang out over at Andrea's. Like, you'll probably like Danica. She's into the same music you are. I was like, okay, cool, whatever. And my mom was like, they have a Wii. And I was like, oh, dang, it's 2007. So I was like, oh, dang, they got a Wii. Yeah, I'm going to go check that out. And we hung out, and it was a good time. And we, like, immediately, me and Ricky and Danica and Andrew, like, we all just, like, hit it off great. My mom, she's already friends with my mom. And she ended up just kind of taking me and my brothers under her wing, because my mom, like, she's not a bad mom. My biological mother, Heather, is not a bad mom at all. I love her very much. But there was just things that she couldn't communicate well or didn't understand about me. I was, like, a little more complicated, I guess, in ways than she knew how to deal with. Andrea just knew how to, she, like, would help my mom, and she could easily interpret ideas in ways that I could understand and help me process my emotions. I was about to turn 13 whenever I first started going over there. So she essentially raised me pretty much throughout my entire adolescence.
Robertson says that in April of this year, Andre was diagnosed with lung cancer. Upon hearing the news, he came up with a way to help out.
It's just been really rough on her. She's kicking. I think she's got done with her last scheduled chemo, but she's, like, in really rough shape after it. And the cancer is still not gone all the way. But that costs a lot of money and takes a lot of time and things out of people, because Mark, her husband, he has to be the one to take her all these places and doctor's appointments and things. So I thought, I was like, well, I know a lot of cool musicians. I was trying to figure out where I could do it. I was like, I want to do it somewhere nice to pull a lot of people. But I didn't really have a venue that I thought would be cool with doing this kind of event. And Cody had a show with Moonsong at Prairie Street Live, but there wasn't really anything going on. There wasn't really anything planned necessarily. I mean, it was on 9/11. And he's like, you could have this date to, like, promote, to do the benefit show for your mom if you want. And I was like, yeah, definitely. And we cleared it with Prairie Street Live, and they didn't care. And we kind of wanted to have, like, a kind of festival. We want a lot of bands to play, and we wanted it to be, like, a whole thing, like a whole, we're going to have vendors there.
He says aside from vendors, several items have been donated that they intend to auction off at the event, from tickets to Megadeth and Slipknot and a voucher for tattoo art, to goods from area businesses such as Pink House Alchemy, Be Unlimited, and more.
Yeah, pretty much everybody I've asked has just been like, oh yeah, how can we help? I'm really fortunate. You know, I've been playing music in this area since 2015, and I'm just really fortunate to have made a lot of friends along the way. And as soon as I reached out, everyone was like, oh yeah, but how can we help? And that's just been, you know, I don't know. I feel ridiculously blessed and privileged to know so many great people in this area and how they're willing to help me as soon as I need it, which is very, very cool.
The Concert Against Cancer takes place this Saturday at Prairie Street Live in Fayetteville. Doors open at 4 p.m. and Moonsong, Garden Snakes, Fight Dream, and No Sweater will perform, as well as Ley Lines. Tickets are $25, and you can find out more at the Facebook pages for Ley Lines or Prairie Street Live. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
This is KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Tallahena, Oklahoma. Listen anytime, anywhere, with the KUAF app for iPhone. It's absolutely free. Contributors to our show this Wednesday included Jacqueline Froelich, Matthew Moore, Timothy Dennis, Dr. Karee Banton, and Charlie Allison. Timothy Dennis produced today's show. Our theme is titled First Hurrah. It is written and performed by Daryl Sean. We can send you a free email newsletter every weekday afternoon that will include links to stories and interviews included in each daily edition of Ozarks at Large. You can sign up for free at KUAF.com. From the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio at the Carver Center for Public Radio in downtown Fayetteville, I'm Kyle Kellums. Please take care of yourself. We'll talk again very soon.